WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Bill T. Jones, has a beautiful body. He shaped it as a runner. He was very fast. And then in college, he reshaped his body to dance. He's now internationally known as the co-founder of Bill T. Jones, Arnie Zane & Company. Zane, who was Jones' partner on and off the stage, died of AIDS in 1988. Jones, who is HIV positive, draws on the experiences of people with life-threatening illness in his piece Still Here. It will be shown on PBS in December. Jones has a new memoir called Last Night on Earth. He has this to say about his body during his early days as a dancer. My feet were big, flat, and did not have high, supple arches. I was not lithe and swan-like. My buttocks were hard and pronounced. My chest was barrel-shaped, and it jutted forward. My carriage was low, grounded, and round, not pulled up and elongated. Jones liked to say this is the body he got from his parents.
For lack of a better word, sometimes I glibly say it comes from 300 years of selective breeding. Now, this is the body of people who loaded potatoes onto trucks all day. This is the body that a woman who could carry the child into the day of labor and be out working in potatoes and then go to the hospital and be back in the field 2 weeks later. That's the body. Now, yes, it's true. This is the body that was trained as an athlete and the body that was finding its way in a world that was changing its appraisal of what a black body is and what a man's body is. And this body, I use it now as part of that discourse. When to take the shirt off, when to look you and the audience in the eye and move the hips suggestively, when to close down. These things, I use my body as a kind of a symbol, a cipher, that is a proving ground on some levels. And it's an aging body.
I learned a lot about you from the book that I really had no idea about. I mean, I knew that you came to dance fairly late, that you weren't classically trained as a child. But I learned that your parents were migrant workers mm-hmm. when you were young. Mm-hmm. How many years did you travel around before settling?
Well, you have to realize that the family is a very big group. It starts, my mother had her first child when she was 15, and then she had 13 more. So by the time she and my father started migrating, I don't think I was even born. And I was born in 52, and they stopped migrating in about 55 and became what at that time was called stagnants. In other words, itinerant workers who have decided to settle down in one area but have not been in an area for enough years to be considered residents. I went to school K through 12 in the upstate community of Wayland, New York, Steuben County, where my father was picking potatoes and fruits and vegetables. And I think the business sort of folded, it ended as I said, migrating in 55, and they stopped doing the gathering of fruits and vegetables probably in the early 60s.
So were you, were most of your friends when you were very young the children of other migrant workers?
No, there were not that many other migrant workers in the area. This is, I think, central to who I have become as a person, and I think who I am as an artist, and that my dad decided to become a black Yankee. He forfeited all of the cultural soil of the South for economic opportunities and educational opportunities for his children, and that was part of the great American story. Suddenly, I was speaking a language that my parents did not speak. Suddenly, I had values that they could not have. Suddenly I had a point of reference culturally and so on that they could not have, and they had been told it would all be good for me, and yet they were no longer even able to assess what it was and who it was I was becoming. And that's one reason in Last Night on Earth I spend a lot of time talking about them and the colorful and often painful history that took me from being the son of a migrant worker to a young social dropout in the 60s, even though how can you drop out of something that was never really yours to begin with, and moved on to becoming an artist working in a very esoteric art form called modern dance.
One of the differences between you and your parents, your parents, or at least your mother, was was a real believer. I mean, she was a fundamentalist and was very and is very much guided by her faith. And I was wondering if you ever shared her faith.
Do I share it? Yes, I share it right now. I don't need Jesus Christ. But I do have a feeling that there is something that unites you and I, Terry. I believe that there is intelligence in the universe. I don't believe in sin, but I do believe that there is a consciousness, spirit, if you like, that does unite us all. And I am, as I grow deeper and as a man and as and I age, and I'm trying to understand what is going on here and what is the meaning of it. And I think that this is something that she has always understood. So I listen more closely to her prayers now, not so much about Jesus, but about what it means to live. What do you need to believe to live?
Wasn't part of her prayers at one time that you would cease being gay and become straight?
You know, I never remember her praying that. No, I must say, she never prayed that. She always wanted us to see the truth of life. Now, I'm sure if you pressed her, she would rather I was married with children. But, you know, when Uncle Tom's Cabin was going on, every night she toured with me and she would stand up on stage and it was a section I gave her. My intention was to demonstrate a form that I thought was on the border of theater and ritual. I was demonstrating it in a postmodern context, that of a dance performance. But for her, what she was doing was offering a benediction that evening. And I'm very proud of that. And she'd say, "Oh, Lord," she'd call out to the Lord as I'm standing next to her improvising, dancing, "aid my son in doing whatever it is he thinks he's doing up here." And I think that's...
That's funny.
Yes, she would. She would. She's there for me. And she believes that, you know, there was nudity in Uncle Tom's Cabin. I remember her saying, "Well, son, you know, you never see pictures of the Savior. He's always half-dressed, too." You know, I mean, she would translate everything in a way that she would understand it. And she is there. She's behind me. And believe me, with all of the controversy that's been, you know, floating around me in the last year, she stood strong. And my mother is, you know, confirmed believer that men are men and women are women and that we're here to have children. I mean, she herself said, "You got to have children until the Lord shuts them off." She doesn't believe in abortion. She doesn't believe in all. She's had 13, 14 kids. But she would not get in the way of my life. This has not been easy. We've had to talk a lot and, quote, soul search a lot. It was very difficult for me to get my mother to say the word gay initially, even to say the word AIDS. But it's an ongoing, dear relationship.
Didn't you do an onstage dialogue with her once?
Yes, I did. I did. It was, as a matter of fact, the first prototype for a piece which found its way into Uncle Tom's Cabin. It was called Faith, and we did it at a dance festival out in Los Angeles. And I asked her to read her favorite passage from the Bible. And then I was going to ask her questions about faith, my premise being, faith is a slave religion. When blacks came to this country, they were forced to get down and at gunpoint and accept Jesus Christ. And I said to her, you know, "How is this possible that you could believe in a religion that was forced on us at gunpoint?" And she said, "Well, you know, we were over in Africa worshiping trees and rocks. And if it took slavery to introduce us to the true master, then slavery was worth it." I thought that was a very strong thing to her here, but from the reading I have done and the investigation I've done with many people of faith and people of color, this is their faith is unflappable. And that was my point, not so much to tackle the historical validity or the political correctness of what she said, but to get in touch with that elusive quality, which is called faith, which I think many of us, myself included, intellectuals, late 20th century creators, are lacking. An infrastructure of belief in something greater than ourselves, or maybe which in fact defines ourselves.
My guest is dancer and choreographer Bill T. Jones. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with dancer and choreographer Bill T. Jones. So do you think that the passion that your mother has always felt in her faith is the kind of passion you brought to dance?
That I bring to dance?
Yeah, that you bring to dance. Mm-hmm.
I would like it to be the passion I bring to every waking moment. Now, excuse me if I get too metaphorical or metaphysical, but it's true Terry. Life right now for me literally is from breath to breath. Anxiety wells up in my chest. When you ask me questions, when I leave this, the next appointment, what will my health be like next week, next year? And it's about every moment finding a way to deal with anxiety, reaffirming one's social agenda, one's life agenda, and getting on to the next moment. That is how I view things now.
How is your health? I know you are.
I am asymptomatic, and I could run around the block right now if I needed to.
Mm-hmm. To me, anxiety means tension, and tension always settles in part of my body. Mm. You know, I have my shoulder tension, my neck tension, my headache tension, the jaw tension, you know.
Yeah. Well, I have it right in the center of my chest. It's fear, and you find yourself not breathing, hyperventilating on the top.
Right.
And making silly choices.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes being angry when silence would have been best. That sort of thing, or making a snap decision when to postpone it would have been best. That's what tension does for me. It's fear oftentimes.
Well, when the tension settles in your chest or when you find yourself breathing differently, how does that affect you as a dancer? I mean, like when my tension settles in my neck, at least I don't have to be dancing.
Right. Well, you know, in the book, I talk a good deal about what it was like to be a runner. And when you run, I was a sprinter, and I was pretty good. And there's an instance where I'm talking about the crunch of the cinders, and suddenly you see the tape, and there's this thing behind your rib cage, between your lungs, that goes click and says now. And then there's a gush of adrenaline, and one thrusts forward, and there's that tape snapping across the pectorals. That is the same thing I feel now on the stage. It is in the middle of an intense conversation like we're having, the thing that says, this is it, Bill. There is no moment but this moment. Give it. Go for it. This is the last moment. This is the first moment. And that is where my dancing comes from at its best, that place right behind the sternum and between the lungs.
And so that pressure in the chest or whatever disappears, the fear stress disappears while you're performing.
Oh, no, it turns into a beautiful substance, radiant, that goes up to the cerebral cortex and down to the sexual organs. And if it's really good, it comes out into the space around you and others feel it.
If you're just joining us, my guest is dancer and choreographer Bill T. Jones, and he's written a new memoir called Last Night on Earth. For many years, you ran your company with your partner, Arnie Zane, and he was not a dancer at all. I mean, he was more a photographer, and I think thought of himself as a photographer. But when you met and had a relationship and formed the company, you worked together as dancers. What was it like to work with you, to work with someone who wasn't a dancer?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the book, Last Night on Earth, I make a great point out of saying, describing the era in which we started working. Everything was up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful time. Now, it might have been totally undisciplined and what have you, but we were the students of a person like Yvonne Rainer, who had done a brilliant work that said, called Trio A, that was danced almost entirely by untrained performers. We were studying a form called contact improvisation developed by a remarkable dancer, Steve Paxton, that said that any two bodies could dance together. I remember having a contact jam with a 98-pound ex-ballerina. I weigh 180 pounds, and she had me through counterlever up on her back. It was life-altering. So it was with Bill and Arnie. And Arnie was an artist through and through. Any work, as soon as he understood it conceptually, he could begin to claim it as his own. So he could roll quicker than anybody I knew. He had a kind of pugnacious, low-to-the-ground sense of movement, and he was a fifth-level karate practitioner. And his work was very much about slashing and making strong shapes in the air. My long body, my wiggles, and more dancerly way of moving made a nice counterpoint to this peculiar guy. And you looked at these two men, Bill and Arnie, and you knew obviously there was something that this grappling, and a lot of what we did was very artful grappling, represented that was deeper. It was about them. And then you thought, well, who are they? Case in point, we went to Berlin and we performed a work of ours, Blauwelt Mountain, in which I build there's a brick wall in the back, and Arnie takes it apart and builds it down the center of the stage, and I dance freely. We were given the German Critics Award. They said the work was a brilliant depiction of the struggle between blacks and whites in America. We didn't think so. We thought we were doing what we did. We were being Bill and Arnie on stage and artfully grappling. But what they saw was something that I no longer disown. They saw something. As much as we were black and white men, they also saw that we were homoerotic, a word that I had never used before. It made us think, oh, is that what they're seeing? They're seeing our private life. And then we became more self-conscious and began to play with what they were seeing and the expectation that was brought by our bodies and the combination of two disparate bodies. And it even informs the way I choose my dance company now. I'm looking for that same kind of a volatile, insightful mix of the unexpected.
Bill T. Jones, he has a new memoir called Last Night on Earth. This is Fresh Air.